during the pandemic, you know, we really have been focusing more on employers making that great match and job seekers finding that next great job.
All right, welcome back to Future Proof. This is episode number 162. And I am your host, Bill Sheridan. Nice to see you. Glad you could be here. How was your Christmas, by the way? Did you get everything that you wanted? If you didn't, did you return it for something you did want? Better yet, did you give away a lot of great stuff to others, right? Did you make someone else's Christmas a little brighter, a little happier, a little less stressful, more hopeful? Because that's the whole point, right? It's the season of giving, folks. So hopefully you were able to give away some pretty awesome stuff. Yeah, happy holidays, everyone. I mean, hope you had a great Christmas, a very happy Hanukkah. Hope you're enjoying the first few days of Kwanzaa, if that's what you're celebrating. Whatever your celebration looks like, here's hoping it's the best one yet. All right. So here's something. Did you see that report? It came out not too long ago. It ranked the states according to how much Christmas spirit they have. Kind of a weird ranking. The folks at GetCenturyLink.com came up with this one. A ranking based on six factors. Okay, here we go. Number one, Google searches for Christmas movies and gingerbread houses. Number two, online shopping for wrapping paper, Christmas cards, ornaments, and yes, Elf on the Shelf. Number three, Christmas music streaming. Number four, tweeting about Christmas. Number five, the number of Christmas tree farms per capita. And finally, charitable giving in the last documented tax year as defined by the IRS. So I'm not sure how scientific all that stuff is, but the results, here you go. Number one, New Hampshire. Maine, number two, Montana, number three, bringing up the rear, DC is dead last. No Christmas spirit in DC. New York is number 50. And in my backyard, Virginia, number 47, Maryland, number 46. Pretty poor showing all around for the Mid-Atlantic region. But you know what? I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. For one thing, the survey focuses only on Christmas, right? I think the folks in the Mid-Atlantic love the holidays as much as anyone. I just think maybe they celebrate more of them, right? Maybe a little more diversity in that dense population zone. I don't know. Just a theory. Everyone's celebrating in their own way, right? And that's the important thing. So look, before we go much further, let me remind you that this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. We're going to talk a little bit about jobs this week and job hunting, job searching, searching for employees, filling that pipeline, right? The great resignation, the whole bit. It's a jungle out there, man. According to the latest JOLTS report, that's the job openings and labor turnover survey from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. A record 4.4 million Americans left their jobs in September. And that's accelerating a trend that's become known as the Great Resignation, right? That number actually dropped a bit in October to 4.2 million, but, you know, still pretty high. This is from the folks at Statista.com. They write, quote, "The number of Americans quitting has now exceeded pre-pandemic highs for six straight months as employers, especially in low-wage sectors, are struggling to fill open positions. The reasons for this trend are, of course, manifold, but one major driver appears to be that many workers are no longer willing to put up with the pay and or working conditions they, perhaps grudgingly, accepted prior to the pandemic." Quote, "I certainly think that the pandemic has led many people to reevaluate their work and their priorities and what they want to do. Elise Gould, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, said, end quote. And in finance, you know, the Great Resignation is wreaking havoc on companies' bottom lines, jeopardizing strategic plans. CFOs are right there on the front lines of helping businesses adapt. And that's from the folks at CFO Dive. They write, quote, the scale of resignations is unprecedented. An August survey by PwC found that a stunning 65% of employees were looking for a new job, and 88% of executives said their company was experiencing higher than normal turnover. Employees are firmly in the driver's seat. Traditional formulas for workplace planning are inadequate, as current and prospective talent is demanding flexible work arrangements and revised pay structures, as well as new expectations for work and company culture. In fact, 88% of employees say that their meaning of success has changed since the pandemic. 75% feel stuck professionally, and the vast majority, or about 85%, are not satisfied with their employer's support, according to a new global survey conducted by Oracle. Finance leaders need to make increasingly complex projections as they guide companies through this novel terrain. The stakes are high. Cost estimates for replacing an employee have traditionally ranged anywhere from 6 months to 2 years of an employee's salary, depending on the position and location. This includes the financial impact of hiring, onboarding, and training, as well as the cost and negative business impact of leaving the position vacant until the new acquired talent reaches full productivity. There are also the intangible effects that prolonged vacancies have on the morale of employees who might bear the brunt of being short-staffed. More than a third of CFOs in the PwC survey said they're very concerned about the turnover remaining high indefinitely and affecting revenue growth. End quote. So, yeah, it's a bit of a volatile market when it comes to talent these days. Employers trying to figure out the best way to attract people and keep them. Employees increasingly willing to test the waters and look for new work. Everyone, you know, looking for advice on how to do all that. So I'm happy to sit down this week with my guest. She is Lauren Welke, and I'm hoping she can help us sort through this mess. Lauren manages strategic partnerships at ZipRecruiter. And ZipRecruiter is feeling the effects of the Great Resignation as well, actually, but sort of in the opposite way than the rest of us, right? As the folks at Yahoo News said recently, ZipRecruiter is finding itself in a sweet spot right now as the demand for labor to support the economic recovery remains intense. And it showed up in the company's latest earnings report. ZipRecruiter saw third quarter sales surge 107% from a year ago. The company also lifted its full-year sales and profit outlooks, end quote. Kind of gives you an idea of where our mindset is these days, right? So I'm happy to be having this conversation right now. Lauren and I talked about the trends, really, that she's seeing in the market right now, the things that job candidates say they want most, and what they should be doing to make themselves attractive to employers, and what employers should be doing to attract these folks and make them want to stay, right? So good stuff and a timely discussion this week. Here is my conversation with Lauren Welke. Well, Lauren, thanks for joining me today. A lot of talk out there these days about, you know, the so-called Great Resignation. I mean, you hear that phrase so much that it's almost... it's almost become cliche in a way, but it's certainly top of mind for a lot of folks in our profession and everywhere else as well. So I guess my question is, what are you seeing at ZipRecruiter in those terms? What kind of trends are sticking out for you recently that might give us some insight into what's going on?
Yeah, so this takes a look at the labor market overall. We do track ZipRecruiter trends, but it's really important for us to take a holistic approach. And so what I can tell you is, as of November, there was roughly 10.4 million job openings and only 7.4 million unemployed Americans. And so there's this huge gap and all these jobs out there. And so what we're finding is employers are really trying to make these hires, and they're having a heck of a time. It's basically a really hard time to hire talent. It's, you know, you might hear terms like the war on talent. And so what we're finding, this is specific to ZipRecruiter, we're just seeing, we have different labels you can attach to jobs that highlight if a job is remote, maybe tuition reimbursement, offering flexible schedules, signing bonuses. And in the year 2021, we've just seen the use of these labels to attract job seekers to their jobs just absolutely skyrocketing. So, you know, things that are really important to job seekers, we know our retirement plans, the flexible schedule, if possible, signing bonuses, the ability to work remote, I would say is huge. And tuition reimbursement, you'll see things, you'll start to see employers getting really, really creative with their hiring strategies, offering pet insurance or, you know, stipends for gym memberships. I mean, really, like, I feel as though nothing surprises me anymore. I'm seeing all kinds of really creative stuff that employers are doing just to attract that talent.
That's really interesting. So, I mean, do you guys have any sense or insight? I mean, what's kind of happening now that is creating that gap? There's so many job openings and not nearly enough workers to kind of fill those, or seemingly it seems that way anyway. What's happening that's kind of creating this?
Yeah. So the labor force is still smaller than it was pre-pandemic by about 3.4 million people. And so what's happened is job openings have recovered faster than the number of people ready to re-enter, even enter for the first time, the workforce. And there's fewer unemployed job seekers per vacancy than before the pandemic, and far fewer than we would expect to see in a normal recession. And so job seekers are proving this reluctancy to return to work for a host of reasons. For example, you know, some people have really main concerns about the workplace health and safety, and that is really discouraging some to return to in-person. Childcare challenges have not yet been resolved. And you know, the unemployment benefits running out, I mean, you'd think that would make more people want to re-enter, but I know that there's the child tax credits and things like that. But I really do think in the next year, we will see a turn. I mean, this cannot go on forever. And just with inflation and everything we're seeing, I mean, certain employers are increasing wages, you know, by huge amounts. And I just don't think it's sustainable. So
go on like that forever, as you said. So, and that was going to be one of my other questions. So, I mean, is this, hopefully this is kind of a temporary phenomenon that we're looking at here, but has power kind of shifted in the job hunt from, I mean, are job seekers or job candidates, do they have more power now than even the employers do? Are they feeling empowered to say exactly what they want?
I do think so. I really do, because, you know, the power's in their hands. There's so many different jobs that they have the ability to apply to. And, you know, I think what happened with the pandemic, in my opinion, is that a lot of employees were kind of forced to reevaluate if this is really what they want to do, or if this is how they want to spend their time. And so the power really is in their hands, whether they are currently employed and maybe, you know, secretly looking, or they're unemployed and looking. It depends how quickly someone wants a job. But I think, you know, you can have so many interviews a week virtually now. And, you know, I have a very good friend who's been looking for a while. And she said it was like a full-time job. She'd been looking, she'd been on about 40 job interviews. And she was, you know, consulting me on how to leverage that. You know, can I tell them I have another offer on the table? Can I use this as leverage? And I'm like, yeah, it's the truth, and it's kind of what you have to do. So there is an art to, you know, finding your next job. And I definitely think the job seeker is very empowered right now.
These numbers that you're referring to here, is this across the board, across all industries, regions? I mean, is it more centered on one area than another, or are we kind of seeing a real trend here just everywhere?
I would say everywhere. As far as November numbers, or, you know, kind of what we gathered there, we saw all major sectors contribute to job gains except for government. And we know that largely to be because government just takes a while to put contracts in place and kind of respond that way. But we did see something really interesting with teachers. Schools were really blindsided by how hard it would be to bring teachers back in for this school year. And so we think that's just because most spend a year working from home. They're reluctant to wake up at 6 a.m., take that commute, and then teach crowds of unvaccinated children. But, you know, schools have started the year with roughly 720,000 fewer staff on payrolls. So I think they took a pretty big hit. But most other industries across the board have seen gains, except for government and what I just shared with education.
And I don't know what the answer is to this one, but of course, we work with the accounting and finance profession. Have you seen anything that kind of sticks out in terms of our profession? Any kind of trends that you're noticing there?
Nothing specific to that I have right now. It's specific to accounting, but I can tell you that, you know, professional and business services, which I want to believe it kind of falls under that, saw 100,000 jobs added in the month of October. And that was the second largest industry to see gains. So we're definitely seeing a lot of hires, but I don't have intel on, you know, maybe these are recent grads who have been holding out and applying all summer. We don't have the breakdown, but that is, it is like fits into the second largest industry that's adding jobs.
Yeah. How has all this impacted ZipRecruiter? I'm curious. How's I'm guessing you guys are probably busier than ever before. But tell me what you're seeing, you know, from the company's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, so ZipRecruiter is great because we're a double-sided marketplace, and so during this time, we've always been committed to helping employers find great talent and helping job seekers find their next great opportunity. So we've always been a double-sided marketplace, but during the pandemic, you know, we really have been focusing more on employers making that great match and job seekers finding that next great job. And so we've done a ton of different features other than just what most people know as far as posting jobs. But we have a whole resume database that employers can use to proactively search for candidates. And to be clear, I should have started off with this. Our value prop really is to, once you post a job to ZipRecruiter, it goes to over 100 niche job boards. So we're sending jobs. We have our artificial intelligence robot. We've named him Phil. He reaches out to candidates when a great match is found. So all this proactive outreach is happening. But in addition, we're really giving employers the tools for that proactive outreach with their resume database. We have a feature called Invite to Apply where they can physically invite a candidate to apply. And so really what's happening is that we're putting the power back in their hand. It is a tough market to hire right now. And so we've also added all those enhancement labels that we talked about just to really help their job stand out, because it's hard to get a candidate to want to click on your job versus all the other ones out there. So we do have different tips and tricks for kind of how to make the perfect job rec, and we have templates and everything. And so, you know, we're doing great. We're seeing, you know, a ton of candidates coming to ZipRecruiter to find their next great opportunity. And that's really our goal.
And you mentioned some of the things, some of the really kind of creative things that you're seeing employers beginning to offer in an effort to kind of attract the best and the brightest. I'm kind of curious what you're hearing from candidates themselves. What do the candidates want? I mean, does it still come down to mostly, you know, money? Or I mean, what are they really looking for from their employers today?
You know, I really think candidates, money of course is important, but I think they're thinking about everything, you know, what they call it OTE, and that's kind of like your all-in offer. So that part of that, yes, is your salary, but you know, then you can monetize how much is the insurance worth, and the pet insurance, and the perks and the bonus. And so we are seeing employers kind of take this holistic approach and get creative with what they're offering, whether it's flexible schedules or you know, PTO or unlimited vacation, I've even heard. So, you know, employers are responding in creative ways based on this what they're seeing candidates want. So, you know, they're advertising to certain demographics, spending a lot of money on social media advertising to attract the right candidate. But we know what candidates really want. I mean, right now, the biggest things I'm seeing are sign-on bonuses, higher pay, flexibility. I mean, I feel like this new world of work kind of, the pandemic has just like thrust it upon us and we're making adaptations. So candidates really have the say and they can command, and we're seeing, you know, many are renegotiating and countering and things like that. And so like we touched on earlier, it's definitely the year of the job seeker.
What's kind of like the most creative thing that you've seen come down the pike in terms of, you know, what employers are doing to try to attract talent? What kind of has stuck out for you creatively?
Yeah, I think, you know, I spend a lot of time like on LinkedIn and I see a lot of posts, but I think a lot of things that I've seen is just employers showing investment from day one to their candidates. So, you know, I was talking to an employer a couple of weeks ago and they were like, you know, we're hiring candidates, but we're not seeing it through to their start date. Like we're having them fall off or drop off or something else. And I'm like, wow. So I think showing that investment. So I think, you know, like if, especially if they're working remote, it's hard to create this culture or at least translate it virtually. It takes time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're seeing things like, you know, they'll either sending a computer or a phone, obviously, and then like a welcome box. That's kind of like, you know, hey, we're happy to have you on the team. And it just has company swag or goodies or, you know, like a handwritten note from someone high up at the company, really like to show they're investing in you and they really don't want you to find something else. Right. So I think that helps. But I've seen, gosh, I mean, I've seen people offering money just to get candidates to show up for interviews. I mean,
interesting.
It really is. I'm like, shoot, I was looking for jobs the wrong time, I guess. But yeah, it's definitely a sign of the times. I never thought we'd see something like this.
So a couple of questions here. What do you think, while we're talking about employers, what should they be doing to kind of make sure that they're, you know, attracting the people that they want to hire, the best and the brightest out there? What, any tips for employers on what they ought to be doing to get their companies out there in front of folks?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think we kind of talked about all of the creative things you can do, but I know for some companies, for larger companies, maybe it's easier to get a budget approved or to pay more, but for the smaller ones, especially, it can be tricky to compete with these larger corporations. And so I would say get as creative as you can, whether it is a signing bonus or whether you're just making sure that you're committing to your culture. So first, I'd say you spend a lot of time thinking about your recruiting strategy, how much you can allocate to that. Depends if you have a recruiter or not, but you really want someone that's going to be your first touch point with candidates to be representing your company in a good light, especially given the competition. And you can imagine if you're a candidate uploading your resume to all these sites, you're probably going to be getting reached out to by a lot of recruiters. So I would say definitely, you know, focus on your hiring strategy and really make sure you have the right people doing it and representing your company. But let's see, I would say work flexibility is huge. And we're seeing many employers have to face this with so many employees having to work from home and juggle kind of like the whole daycare thing. So flexibility is huge. And really just, I mean, I've heard of so many out of the box perks, like, you know, giving, whether you're even just giving money for a cell phone and Wi-Fi per month, anything from that to, you know, just your 1 year bonus or, you know, 90 day to get people to even stay, 90 day bonuses. Like I'm seeing all kinds of creative stuff like that. And I think just really kind of proving that you're invested in like a candidate's career trajectory. We know candidates and employees care the most about that, especially kind of millennials and Gen Z. So career trajectory is like the biggest thing. And so if you can kind of, you know, if you don't have some type of development or training program or something that shows you're committed to investing, I would say think about that because candidates really care about that when making a decision.
Oh, absolutely. How about on the candidate side? What should candidates be doing in this type of environment? I can't imagine it's just as easy as saying, here I am, but what kind of suggestions might you have for them?
I would say, you know, on the side, I help a lot of my friends with their resumes, and just a couple tips that I've helped them with along the way that they were like, I had no idea. Resume format, you know, you should kind of have one for in person, maybe one that looks a little more aesthetically pleasing, but then you should have a Word document that can be readable, because typically when you upload your resume to any site, it's being kind of scanned and screened by like AI before it even gets to the final destination or in the hands of the gatekeeper or hiring manager. So make sure your resume format is in a document. It's readable. It's simple, easy text. It might sound like a simple tip, but many people don't know this. And then I would say just really focusing on in their resumes, making sure that it's not just like a copy and paste of the job description of, you know, for the work that they were expected to do. You know, your resume is kind of your brag book. And many people, you know, I used to be too, are uncomfortable with putting things in there that showed like, okay, you know, increased revenue 80% year over year, or, you know, did this multi-touch campaign that hit on this. You always want to use numbers and show what you did via numbers, because there's power in data. And so anything you did that you can quantify, and I tell people before you leave your job, like make sure you have, even if it's, you know, you can't disclose, like the nondescript version of what you did. And then simple things like syntax and like making sure that your past jobs are in past tense. It might sound silly, but you really want to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward when someone reads your resume, because mm-hmm. we know that the average person reading it is taking about 15 seconds before they even make up their mind. So
anything in resumes that you would say, you know what, you don't really need to include that anymore? I mean, you know, I back in the day, objective, like at the top, yeah. was like a huge thing. And it was a very kind of rigid structure to a resume. But how would you, what kind of suggestions would you have on how to actually structure that type of information?
Yeah, so it does depend, like some of its preference, some of its industry. I wouldn't say like, you know, you must get rid of the objective, but for the most part, when you're applying for a job, they know that your objective is to obtain that job. And right. especially with cover letters, like that goes even more into it and why you'd be a good fit. But I'd say the first thing I always tell people to do is tape off your full street address. And, you know, if they want to hire you, they'll get it. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, you could put the city and state that you live in. Otherwise, you're just putting your information out there, and that kind of freaks me out. That's kind of a personal one. But otherwise, I would say, you know, I don't think there's any one length that makes a perfect resume. Some people say, you know, keep it to a page, but it really depends on experience. But I would say once you truly feel that something is no longer relevant, like once you have your first few jobs under your belt, like you should be able to expand, and that should be able to take up real estate, especially if it's relevant to the work you've done. Now, maybe I always tell everybody to keep kind of a draft resume that has everything. And then when it's time to apply for a job, you know, make a copy of it, delete the things that maybe aren't relevant. And then you always want to go through and look at the keywords of the job description for the job you want. See if you can kind of, you know, plug and play them into your resume. Not at all to tell a lie about your experience, but more so to just make sure that you make it through the web crawlers initially.
Yeah.
And, but I would say like, yeah, take off, like if it's any more than like four or five bullet points and it's just telling about like the mundane day-to-day work you did, it's like employers don't care about that as much. They really want to know, like, what did you do to move the needle and make a difference at that organization?
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that's some great tips, great insights as well. And Lauren, I really appreciate you being here and taking the time to kind of offer your insights on that. So thanks so much for your time and your insights. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Great stuff there from Lauren Welke. She manages strategic partnerships with ZipRecruiter. You can learn more by visiting ziprecruiter.com. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. Here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future ready skills now.
by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is it, gang. That's a wrap on this show. It's a wrap on 2021, too. Have a safe and very happy new year. And we'll see y'all in 2022.